Working Cows Podcast, episode 94.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
Hi, everybody. It's Clay Connery, host of the Working Cows Podcast, powered by the Global Ag Network. My guest today is Ken Olson. Ken is a professor and extension beef specialist with the Department of Animal Science for the South Dakota State University. He has a Bachelor of Science from Montana State University in Bozeman in agricultural education, a Master's of Science in range science from Montana State University in Bozeman, and a PhD from Utah State University in range livestock nutrition. And that is exactly why we invited him on today to talk to us about managing rumen function in our cow herds and how we can pay attention to it and some things to keep in mind for managing it. And I look forward to a great discussion here with Ken today on this topic. So Ken, thanks for joining me today on the Working Cows Podcast.
You bet. Thank you.
So what I want to start off by is just, what is the rumen? How is it functioning? How are we impacting that function is where we're going to go. But what, first of all, what is the rumen and how is it functioning? Can we start off there?
Yep. It's a great place to start. So we've all heard that about how cows and sheep and various other animals that graze have a four-compartment stomach, and they chew their cud. And those are kind of the defining things that of what a cow, what drives a cow or a sheep or a deer or an elk or an elephant, for that matter, is that the animals with that four-compartment stomach are called ruminants. And the defining part of that is that with a stomach that has four compartments, you can have more different things going on to digest what the animal eats than you do when you have a simple one compartment stomach like the humans do, or pigs or dogs do. And the key is that the first two compartments are, the first compartment that the food falls into when they swallow after they eat is the reticulum, and the second compartment is the rumen. And those two compartments work together to allow the cow to digest the fiber in a forage-based diet. Those of us that have a simple one-compartment stomach can't digest fiber. We need fiber in our diet to keep our digestive tract healthy, but we don't digest it. We just pass it through, and we get that healthfulness that comes from that rough material, so to speak, moving through our system. In a cow, that material gets digested in the rumen, and the cow herself still can't do it. The cow herself still has no more capability to digest fiber than you or I do. But the magic in the rumen is that it's a fermentation chamber full of billions and billions of microorganisms, bacteria, fungi, protozoa, yeast, and dozens of species of each live together and feed each other and literally feed the cow by digesting the fiber in the feed for her. So just one more quick comment on the value of digesting fiber. So plants create fiber to create structure for the plant. That's what helps make a plant be able to stand upright, because they don't have bones like animals do. And so it's there to make structural strength, and therefore it has this structural strength is then the chemistry of that strength is what makes it impossible to digest by our digestive tracts, but digestible by microbes. And so when they break that, what happens is the plant uses photosynthesis to create glucose, and it takes some of that glucose and chemically bonds it into these structures called fiber. And if we can turn around and have microbes digest that fiber, it releases the glucose. So it once again is a sugar. It's a source of energy. And what the cow has to do is share some of that energy with the microbes. So the microbes take their share and leave the rest for the cow. It's a symbiotic relationship. Neither one of them could live without the other. But by working together, both the microbes and the cow can live a very good life by providing for each other.
So we're going to ask one more foundational question before we move on. And that is, how would you compare today's understanding of the rumen and its function to maybe the understanding that the industry had, say, when you started your career around 30 years ago?
We've learned a lot, and we continue to learn a lot. It's pretty interesting in that we have had an understanding that when you feed a cow, and you think about the nutrient requirements for a cow, the unique thing is that you have to really not be thinking about the cow herself. The first thing you need to think about is the rumen microorganisms, and you have to ask yourself, what are their nutrient requirements? And if you meet the requirements of the rumen microbes, the microbes can do a lot to actually improve the quality of what's being fed to the cow and its nutrient value to the cow. And we can get into the details of that if you'd like to, but that gets pretty complicated. But over the 30 years of my career, early in my career, we were refining our understanding of what those requirements for the microbes were and how the feeding the microbes correctly influenced the digestive process. We learned about how we could speed up or slow down the rate at which the microbes digested the fiber, and how that would, if you don't feed the microbes right, digestion slows down, food gets stuck in the rumen waiting to be digested, which of course means that the cow can't eat till it, think of it as a big vat or a big tank. You fill the tank, you can't put more in the tank till you empty the tank. So if you slow down the rate you empty, you have to slow down the rate you fill it, which means cows can't eat as much. So early in my career, that's where we were really focused, was an understanding of how that rumen microbe population functioned and drove the digestion of feed in the system. The thing that impeded us early in my career was a really poor understanding of the microbes themselves. We had had microbiologists identify the major species, and we could differentiate, and we'd say these species, when they're in the rumen, we are good at digesting fiber. These others are good at digesting protein. These others can do things like detoxify certain poisons. And so you see all these different species of microbes in the rumen had different purposes. We had a really crude understanding of who was there from microbe species and what they did. The whole business about being able to test DNA with the modern molecular genetic sorts of tools that we have has meant that within the last 10 years, our knowledge of what microbes are in the rumen and what they're each doing has exploded because we have so much more. Our old techniques were so crude. I've heard one ruminant nutritionist I used to work with, who's now retired, called it scoop shovel microbiology versus versus lab bench with the little pipettes and lab tools that we use nowadays. We're learning things. They've found new species that we didn't know existed in the world, and we've learned a lot of new things. I think the other thing that we've learned is the interrelationships between the microbial population in the rumen and in the rest of the world. A similar revolution has happened in the microbiology in soils.
Yep.
And I am always astounded at the similarity of this microbial community and how it functions in the soil and how that drives the health of the soil and the productivity of plants is running almost identical to the microbiology in the rumen and how that drives the health and productivity of the cow.
Yep.
Or sheep, or whoever the ruminant is we're talking about.
Sure.
There's amazing parallels there.
Yep. And that was my note. Connection to soil health. What's the connection between soil health and healthy rumen function? And just before I let you rant on that, if you want to, and Joel Salatin, one of the many things he's known for saying is that when he picks a garden or a carrot out of the garden and he wipes it off on his dirty pants and he eats it without washing it, he figures that the microbes on the outside of that carrot meet the microbes in his gut and say, "Cousin, it's good to see you." So, but anyway, go ahead.
I think he's right. And I think if we took our children out in the garden and fed them more carrots and ground vegetables wiped off on our pants, we would do wonderful things for our kids' immune systems. Mm-hmm. You've probably seen the news about the microbial ecosystem in the guts of humans. And that's more, we don't have a rumen, but we have a microbial population in our large intestine. And the relationship between our health and the health of those rumen microbes is another one of those, it's running right. The explosion of knowledge is running parallel with the one we have about soil microbes and rumen microbes, and the importance of that to it's a symbiotic relationship. Like I said before, the importance of that to our health and how our immune system functions is we're just starting to scratch the surface about what we're soon going to learn. This microbiology thing in general is it's a really exciting frontier that we're working on.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've laid a good foundation here, and I want to continue on with some of the questions I've written down as you've been talking. And the first question I wanted to talk about is the connection between body condition score and rumen function. To me, it seems like there's quite a few steps between decreased rumen function and losing body condition score. Are they connected, and is that a good understanding?
Oh yeah, they're directly connected, because so here's the deal that we were here's where the science of ruminant nutrition was when I started, you know, and this would be specifically focused on grazing ruminants, grazing cows and grazing sheep primarily, was that we understood that if you didn't provide adequate protein in the diet to meet the protein requirements of the rumen microbes, that the digestion of the feed would be reduced and it would slow things down, and just, you know, those pioneers in the field that came a generation or two before me had just realized there was a relationship. And it's a really direct one-step process from keeping the rumen functioning properly, and that drives the nutritional status of the cow. And when you ask about body condition scoring is no more than our way of measuring the nutritional status of the cow.
Right.
So we go out there in February. Well, let me change this up as a great example. Let's say you go out there in the fall when you wean your calves or when you preg check your cows, and you body condition score them then. And let's say that on the average you have a condition score of 6 on a scale of 1 to 9. So 1 is
dead,
thin to the point of not healthy. 9 is so overly fat she's not healthy, and a 5 is dead center. So let's say they come in off of summer grass, and you've weaned your calves, and now you condition score your cows in their 6s, and you go, well, my cows are in, you know, that's good. I'm going into the winter above the midpoint. And the neat thing about that is that gives you some cushion for tough weather in the winter. Puts a little fat on their back, which is a great insulator against cold weather. And it has set you up so that when you get to calving in the spring, you got a really high probability without having to spend a small fortune on feed for those cows to be a condition score 5. And there's a lot of really good research from about the 1980s that shows that that's an ideal 5 or slightly better is ideal condition score calving, because it sets them up to have been providing good nutrition to the fetus. So you get a vigorous calf on the ground. It sets them up to put good nutrients into the colostrum, that first milk that provides immunity to the calf. And so the calf gets a better start in life. It sets that cow up so she can quickly put nutrient resources into herself to maintain herself and into lactation and into her reproductive tract, because that cow has about 80 days from the day she calves till the day she has to get pregnant again. And in that 80 days, her uterus has to return to its original normal non-pregnant size and get healthy again and get its muscle tone back after all that business about being stretched with pregnancy and pushing hard and for delivery and all of that. And her system has to recover to the point that she's cycling, meaning she's ovulating, having estrous cycles and ovulating with a fertile egg so that she gets pregnant again. All that has to happen in 80 days. So condition score 5 or better sets her up so that she will be able to do all those things. And if we can maintain that plane of nutrition, or with spring grass coming on, have that plane of nutrition slightly increasing as we enter the breeding season, you get good breed ups. And they breed up early in the breeding season, so you have a herd of a tight calving group of cows that all calve together, hopefully within the first 30 to 40 days, and you don't have a lot of late calving cows. And so the body condition scoring is this really valuable tool we have to understand nutritional status. And if we'll pay attention to it, it'll tell us when our management is working and when it's not, simply by periodically recondition scoring. And it doesn't have to be the entire cow herd. Just when you're checking cows, just drive through and condition score every 10th cow, calculate the average. 2 weeks later, do it again. Doesn't have to be the same 10% of the cow herd. Just condition the score every 10th cow as you drive through the cows. Calculate the average. Did it go up or down? Did you want it to go up? Did you want it to go? Was it okay if it went down? Because it's a time of year, there wouldn't be any harm. Or they were in such good condition they could lose a little. Or if you want to maintain it and you are maintaining it, condition scoring is free. It takes a few minutes of your time just when you should be checking cows anyway. You don't need to make a special trip through the cows to do it. It'll tell you a lot. You know, you get into August and you start looking at cows in there and you calculate the average on the 1st of August and you calculate it again 3 weeks later in the last half of August and they've slipped a little. Let's say you calculate an average in the beginning of August and the average is 5.2. So you got some cows that are 5, you got a few cows that are 6s pulling it, but you got an average. 3 weeks later, you got an average and they're only 5s. You've lost on the average 2/10 of a condition score in 3 weeks. And a condition score is going to be, depending upon the size of the cows, 80 to 90 pounds. You know, that's a 2/10 of a condition score is on the average. Those cows have lost 20 pounds in 3 weeks. That's 20 pounds in 20. That's
pound a day.
That's potentially significant. Maybe a pound a day isn't significant. Maybe it's just because you had a hot spell and they haven't been eating like they should. Maybe it's because though your pasture rotation is off, or your sequence of which pastures you're using is off, or you've got a problem with water quality in the pasture you're in, and this is the way the cows are telling you that they're not drinking their share of water because it's got high in sulfates or something's wrong with it that's making it not a desirable water source. So It's a tool that won't tell you what the problem is or what the good management is, but it'll tell you that you got a problem or not. And so to tie this back to your original question, it's a tool that tells us the nutritional status of the cow at any point in time we measure it. But if we remeasure it through time, we can follow trends in status. Are they gaining or losing? If they're losing, perhaps it's because we're not feeding the rumen microbes right. Perhaps it's because of a couple of those examples I just named. High sulfate water. We're putting a toxic substance in the rumen, and that's altering the rumen microbe population. The cow's not going to drink as much of that poorer quality water, so we're not meeting the water requirements of the microbes or the cow. On the other hand, it might be that it's just the maybe this always happens in August because that's a time of year with a lot of heat, and the grass just isn't growing as rapidly as it was early in the summer. And it's okay. It's normal. But if you do this year in and year out on a regular basis, you start to understand the pattern of how things work on your operation. And you can start looking for solutions when it's not a good pattern.
Ken, just a minute. I'd like to share a brief discussion I had with Aaron Berger about the High Plains Ranch Practicum and how it can serve people in making better decisions on their ranch business. And I would also like to remind people that the deadline is quickly approaching. Coming up at the end of this week is the deadline for registering for the High Plains Ranch Practicum. That is June 1st. So if you're interested, get in while the getting is good. And here's Aaron on the benefits of the High Plains Ranch Practicum.
Really excited about this class. This is going to be the last one that we do. Really have an excellent lineup of presenters, ranchers who have been in the industry, who are effective and good at what they do. And that together with, I think, the curriculum that we provide really provides a great learning experience. And the camaraderie, exchange of ideas, the opportunity to challenge one another really fosters an environment where I think learning occurs. And so excited about this last High Plains Ranch Practicum, and would encourage folks, if they would like to still participate and they're hearing this podcast, give us a call, and if we can get you in, we will.
Ken, how much time is there separating a decreased rumen function and a loss of body condition score in your understanding?
Well, that's a great question that's hard to answer because the whole situation is extremely fluid. If I've got cattle in a pasture, let's say I'm in a rotational grazing plan where I rotate the cows about every 2 weeks. So cows have been in the pasture about 2 weeks. It's time to move them. I go out there and I can see that the pasture they're in has been pretty well utilized. It's time to move them. I move them. And the second they go into the new pasture and eat their first meal in the new pasture, that rumen microbe population is going to change dramatically. It's going to respond to that different source of nutrients that's coming to it. And literally, as we rotate cows through pastures, there's a roller coaster of changes in that rumen microbe population, in that they get this burst of nutrition when that cow gets to select the best of everything in a new pasture, and the population booms. And then as time goes on, if we graze that pasture down, and every day that those cows are there and the best stuff yesterday is no longer there, so they take the second best stuff today, and tomorrow they'll take the third best stuff. By the end, those microbes aren't being fed as well, and that population is changing. We're probably shifting the kinds of species and decreasing the total number of bugs in the rumen. And then we feed them, and it'll boost it up. I had a dairy farmer, once tell me, I can't remember the exact numbers, but if he milks his cows in the morning and changes and whatever alfalfa hay he was feeding the cows the day before he finished, and he goes to a new stack of hay. So he feeds them in the morning, he milks them in the morning, he feeds out of the new stack of hay during the day. And that evening, if that's poor quality hay in the stack, he'll see a decrease in the amount of milk that goes into his milk tank with the evening milking. Huh.
Wow.
Or if it's a better quality alfalfa, he'll see an increase in milk volume in the tank in 12 hours.
Wow. So
yeah,
there's at least some separation between body condition score and rumen function. Is there an earlier clue before a loss of body condition score that can tell us about rumen function?
Yeah. Monitoring the grass itself, you know, looking at your pasture, getting to understand what good quality pasture looks like on your operation, what a grazed off pasture looks like, and rotating before you force them to eat the nasty stuff. So the pasture will tell you a lot. The other one, and I think this is where you're heading with this question, is can you tell from the feces? Can you look at the manure and get an understanding? And that's a mixed bag. The manure is what ends up coming out of the rear of the cow is a mixture of feed that didn't digest, rumen microbes that pass through the cow with the feed and didn't get, rumen microbes themselves are a source of nutrition for the cow once they're done doing their job. But some of them don't get digested and pass out through the cow. There's tissue from the cow, the inner lining of the digestive tract is always being replaced, much like our skin gets replaced. And so the old tissue, the dying skin cells or the dying inner membrane cells are always being slept off. So what's coming out the back end is this complex mixture of stuff that it's often hard to interpret. It's nearly impossible to interpret from it what they were eating on the front end. And for at least the last century, ruminant nutritionists have been trying to find some magic thing we can measure in the feces that tells us, that gives us a really wonderful predictor of what they ate originally, and we're still not there. The Natural Resource Conservation Service with the USDA, or NRCS as their acronym is, has a tool where producers can collect a fresh fecal sample. And they send it to a laboratory that Texas A&M University has in Texas. And it gets analyzed in the lab. And they've created this predictive relationship between what cows ate and what came out in their feces. So they get fecal samples and they predict what they must have eaten. And that's been around since the 90s. It was really popular in the 90s and it kind of died down in the 2000s. And now because of current NRCS programs, it became really popular again. And a lot of producers have used it. And a lot of producers started coming to us in extension and coming to their NRCS county office staffs and saying, these predictions coming from NutBal is the acronym for Nutritional Balancer, which is this prediction program that uses the results from the lab work on the fecal samples. These NutBal results don't make sense. They say that my cattle should be, it's late July, early August. The grass is still green on my pastures. My cows look great. I know they're gaining condition. I know they're milking well. I know the calves are growing like crazy. But the NutBal thing saying that they're tremendously deficient in protein and predicts that they're losing 2 pounds a day in weight. So one of my colleagues, Adele Hardy, and I did a study where we compared the diets of the cattle to the feces. And the way we look at diets from a research standpoint is we use surgically altered cattle that have the cannula, the hole with the rubber cap on it, and that goes into the rumen through their flank. And so we can go in there and we can collect a sample of the diet those cows are actually eating. The cow gets to pick her diet and show us what she chooses to eat. And we would do the chemistry on those diet samples, and we would send at the same time, at the moment we collected the diet sample, we would also collect a fecal sample from that individual animal do the chemistry on the diet samples here and send the fecal samples to Texas A&M. So it went through the same process and got the same nut valve prediction. The predictions from nut valve were in the same ballpark as the actual diets in June, but by August and September, there was no relationship. The nut valve results always said that the nutrition was awful, and in reality, it was still pretty good. And as the forage matures and loses nutritional value, those are the times we most need a predictor to help us understand what's going on nutritionally so we can change our management. We can rotate pasture, or we can feed a supplement, or do a whole variety of things. And so it's a tool that has tremendously limited potential.
Sure.
And I actually recommend that producers, and NRCS knows this. We've been communicating with them that we see these problems, and they understand it. They've seen the same concerns that producers that are using it have had, and they're actually moving away from the fecal sampling thing and moving towards having them collect forage samples off the pasture. Huh.
Which is incredibly difficult, from my understanding.
Well, it's not easy, and it's not perfect. But basically what it boils down to is you let animals graze in the pasture for a few days so that you can find grazed plants, and near the grazed plants you can find an ungrazed plant of the same species, and you simply hand harvest and you just follow some pattern to your pasture that's similar to the places that the cattle are going. You go those same places and do this kind of paired sampling thing. Hmm. And send that to a lab, and you can get we can't hand pluck a sample as well as they can graze, but we can get reasonably close.
Sure.
And close enough that it's way better than not doing anything. And the neat thing with those hand plucked samples is that they work really well for looking at mineral consumption. And we then can use that information to pick the best mineral supplement for the cattle, or in some cases, some producers actually have a custom mineral formulated to match up with the deficiencies and excesses of actual minerals that are in the forage samples they collect. Hmm. And that in and of itself ties back to rumen microbiology, because what we're really doing with getting this mineral nutrition balanced up is going back to what I said earlier about you got to meet the nutrient requirements of the rumen bugs first and then worry about the cow second. And that's what we're really doing with this hand plucking of samples and getting the mineral profiles, is working really hard to balance the total mineral consumption of the cow from both forage and the mineral supplements we put out to stimulate the rumen microbial population.
You mentioned a while ago that we want to manage the early understanding was about managing protein levels so that the rumen could function, rumen microbes could function. Is there a concern about managing energy? Is that new? Is that a misunderstanding, or is that the same thing? How is that related?
Yeah, no, that's an excellent question. And it's an argument we've had in the ruminant nutrition community forever, and it's still not gone away, is which is the most important nutrient to manage, protein or energy? You know, they need more energy than they need protein, so some people argue that's the most important one to manage. But in this particular case, if you don't meet the protein requirements, it's guaranteed you won't digest the fiber and extract the energy. So if you want to put this as a which comes first, the chicken or the egg, the protein has to come first. In my mind, and in the mind of most of the colleagues I agree with anyway, we feel like that first limiter is protein. And if there's a protein deficiency, that's the first one we fix. And then after we've fixed that and we've gotten the rumen microbes to digest the fiber, if we're still, after fixing all that, we're still deficient in energy, then we go beyond that to consider what we do to need to do to increase energy in their diet even further. But protein comes first. And that's been around since, oh, I think the original research on that goes back to the 40s, that protein-energy relationship. And where we've gone with that is by the 90s, we had a really good understanding of how to manage that relationship. And in fact, because those organic molecules that are digested by the rumen microbes, you know, those sugars that are in the structure of the fiber, because those are organic and therefore carbon-based, we got to the point that we understood that you could predict the ideal diet based on the ratio of carbon to nitrogen in the diet. Carbon being the important element in all organic molecules that are nutrients in our feeds, but then nitrogen is this unique element that's in amino acids. I mean, that's what identifies amino acid, is it has a nitrogen atom in it. And that's amino acids are the structural backbone of protein. They are protein. So if we can understand that carbon to nitrogen ratio, we're really telling ourselves this is the energy to protein ratio that the rumen microbes are going to create for us, because they're literally the microbes are breaking that feed down to where they can extract actual carbon and actual nitrogen. Well, if we get that ratio right, that they get to extract those in the right ratio to meet their requirements, they will do the digesting and serve as the source of protein for the cow to give her the right ratio of energy to protein. So here's what those numbers look like. If you're in about the ratio of 7 or 8 parts carbon to 1 part nitrogen, that's a pretty ideal ratio. If you get down to 2 or 3 parts carbon to nitrogen, you're short on energy, excess in protein. And that's where we're at right now in early spring grass. We've got excess protein. But we call early spring grass, we call it washy. Cows get thin, runny manure, and that's a sign that we've got too much protein, not enough energy. Too much nitrogen, not enough carbon. We get into June and July, that's when we have that ratio is just about perfect. As the grass matures and the protein/nitrogen content declines, that carbon to nitrogen ratio keeps climbing. And when we get up above about 12 or 13 parts of carbon to 1 part nitrogen, we're now in a nitrogen or protein deficient situation. And that's when you start thinking about putting, you know, what we call in ranch terms, caking the cows, putting out a protein supplement to grazing cows. So that we got lots of carbon in the grass in the form of that fiber, and we need to get that nitrogen back up here so that we're feeding enough, getting that balance back to that 7-to-1, 8-to-1 ratio to make those microbes as happy as they can be.
Sure. So that leads me to the next question, and we're getting towards the end here, and I appreciate your time today. But is a good pasture rotation as good or better than supplementation? If you're going to rotate more often, more regularly, are you able to meet the nutrient requirements for more of the year without that supplementation? Or is there a supplementation method that maybe is better than one or the other? Loose mineral tubs, cake, some of those things?
Okay. Perhaps we need to start another. We need to start the part two session, because that's a loaded question. It's very complex, and I'll start with this. What are your goals for your cow herd? And what are, you know, and your goals are going to drive their nutrient needs, and their nutrient needs are going to drive your management. So if you have high, if your goals involve the cows having a high nutrient requirement that can't be met by the grass, let's say calving in February when the grass isn't going to start growing, and therefore you're on dormant, lowest quality possible grass, then you have no choice but to start looking for at supplementation. Okay. And whatever it is that's driving you to calve in February, if that's an important goal that you, that's where you need to be, then automatically your options shift towards supplementation. Now, there had better be some substantial advantages to February calving that show up as some form of income to pay the feed bill for that supplement, because you're probably talking about an off ranch source of feed that has to be purchased at the feed store, and you got to pay that bill. And if your cows can't produce enough additional income through the calf crop they produce, or you don't can't come up with a marketing channel that adds value to those calves to pay that feed bill, then you need to rethink your goals. So it's this overarching at the entire, think of the ranch as a biological system that's got all of these living organisms that you've got to manage them all in concert with each other. You got grass to manage, you got forbs and shrubs on your rangeland that you got to keep all those healthy and diverse. You got a cow herd you want to keep healthy and productive. You've got all of these things are moving parts. And then you've got marketing, which creates another set of moving parts. And so you got to keep all that working together. And you got to set your goals for what you're going to produce and how you're going to market it and how you're going to produce it based on your resources. So if your resources and your goals dictate February calving, you're going to move towards, at least until you get to green grass, that's supplementation is really important. If your goals are to minimize outside inputs, even if it means lighter weaning weights, then you move to later calving, perhaps, and you don't calve in February. You wait and calve until those cows are going to get adequate nutrition on green grass to meet all those needs. And then it's the pasture rotation becomes the key to good nutrition versus the right supplement being purchased in the feed store. I've seen really good producers. Those are two, I've chosen two of millions of possible combinations of things that could be done. I've seen people in Western South Dakota calve in January and February and be extremely successful at meeting their goals and having value from their calf crop that pays the feed bill for a winter calving cow. I've seen people calving in May and June who still have an extremely healthy set of cows and an extremely healthy calf crop and a reduced feed bill. They've probably got lighter weaning weights, but on the other hand, they don't need as much income because they don't have as much expense. So it's all about creating the right balance is drives. And the producers that are the most successful are the ones who are most capable of balancing all that and managing complexity, you know, knowing when the supplement needs to come into the pasture, into the situation, knowing when pasture rotation is the key driver, knowing when what drives the right calving season for them, what drives the right weaning date for them. You know, you and I talked about that before we started the recording about it. Those things have to be adjusted. Calving and weaning often get adjusted in concert with each other. So it's not a one answer question you just asked me.
Well, I appreciate your answer to it. And with that, we're going to wrap up, but I do want to give you the opportunity to share any resources you think might be helpful in getting a better understanding of this or ways people could go about educating themselves further. If you have anything that jumps to mind, I will link it in the show notes page at workingcows.net/94.
Yeah, there's a variety of resources. I would, rather than list specific programs or specific reading materials, I'm going to list three places to go look for materials. One is, I work for SDSU Extension, so I better think we have something to offer, and we do. So come to Extension. We have a number of programs that are designed to help producers deal with either parts or the whole of managing a ranch system. Second place to go is the folks I mentioned earlier, is NRCS. They have a variety of programs that they're more land-based in terms of land conservation than animal-based, as in the cow. But yet a lot of what you do to improve the land or to do a better job of conserving the land is also good for the cow herd. So they're a great source of resources. And then the third place I'd point people out is the South Dakota Grassland Coalition. When we're looking at using pasture forage as the source of nutrition that feeds those rumen bugs, the Grassland Coalition membership is a group of progressive, primarily producers, who really have an understanding of some of those relationships we talked about, of how managing for improved soil health creates improved grass, creates improved cattle health and productivity. So those are three organizations that provide great resources to people that run ruminant animals.
Yep, and I'm not being paid to say this, but the South Dakota Grassland Coalition Grazing School comes up in September in Chamberlain, South Dakota, and I think it's worth the drive from quite a distance if you're able to make it. So, Ken, I appreciate your time today.
You're welcome. And yeah, thanks for the plug to Grazing School. I work with the Grassland Coalition to plan and put on the Grazing School. For the first time ever, we're having a June Grazing School in a place other than Chamberlain. It's in Wall, and unfortunately, it's obvious. There's obvious demand because it quickly filled. We're already over capacity, but the message has been heard loud and clear by Grassland Coalition leadership, and there will be more West River grazing schools in the future.
That's good to hear.
But in the meantime, there's still space in September in the school in Chamberlain. Yep. So
that's good to hear because I missed the June one. So, but anyways, I appreciate your time today. Thank you.
You bet. Thank you. It's been great.
Well, really appreciate Ken's time there. Very good stuff. Very practical things that we can apply, and appreciate him taking my curveball at the end there in stride and doing a good job with that. So really looking forward to future episodes here on the Working Cows podcast. We have that episode with Aaron Berger coming up. It's going to release after the deadline. So reminder of that deadline for the High Plains Ranch Practicum. Before we get to Aaron, we've got episode 95 with Steve Kenyon talking about his book, The Calendar of the Year-Round Grazer. So look forward to that next week on the Working Cows podcast.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.